Omaha Public Radio presents another program from Bellevue University on Noon Forum. On today's program, we'll hear a debate on the topic, Does Religion Have a Role in Government? The participants will be arguing, yes, religion does have a role in American government, Amy Melton, a member of the Omaha City Council, representing District 7, and arguing, no, religion does not have a role in American government, Ann Boyle, a member of the Nebraska Public Service Commission. This program, presented by the Bellevue University Center for American Vision and Values in celebration of Constitution Day, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday afternoon, September 17, 2014, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of Bellevue University, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Rod Hewlett, the William and Bernice Grucock Chairman in the Center for American Vision and Values at Bellevue University.
Today we're going to talk about something that I think is one of the most important parts of our tradition because we're celebrating Constitution Day today, and that is the First Amendment and also the idea of religion and how government and religion interface or should not interface with each other. Given the events of the day, I won't go into them in great detail, this is incredibly relevant from a social standpoint, from a structural standpoint, and as we know, most people in America from the very inception of the idea of America has viewed religion as a central institution in our society. So we're joined today by two wonderful experts. Let me introduce our two guests that will be speaking to you. And the way we've set this up is each of them will have an opportunity to spend 10 minutes taking a different side of the debate on the core question, which I'll get to in just a second and share with you. And each of them have the first 10 minutes to make their presentation. They do not know what each other might say. And then they have 5 minutes in rebuttal. They can use up to 10 minutes. Rick will be sort of our monitor. At 8 minutes, he'll stand up and let them know they have 2 minutes left into their 10-minute time if they're still going. First, I'd like to introduce Ann Boyle. And Ann was elected to the Nebraska Public Service Commission in 1996 and has decided to retire this upcoming January after 18 years in the commission. Well, thank you for your service. She is a fourth-generation office holder. Her family's long history in Nebraska politics dates back to 1896 when her great-grandfather, E.E. Howell, was elected a state senator. At that time, Nebraska was a two-house body. In 1965, Ann married Mike Boyle. She was a bride of about 5 years old at the time. And he was the former mayor of Omaha and present Douglas County commissioner. Ann has been actively involved in politics since 1954, again, a very early start for her. At an age of 12, when her father, Sam Howe, was elected to Douglas County Treasurer. Over time, she has worked for many candidates in ballot issues and served as the chair of the Douglas County Democrats and Nebraska Democratic Party. Ann did win the coin toss and has elected to take second, which is a good debating strategy, as I understand. Ann is also well known as a consumer advocate and has served on several national boards relating to telecommunication. She believes that she serves the public, not the party, and often says that solving problems for consumers is a favorite part of her job. So thank you so much. And we also have Councilwoman Amy Melton, who was elected to Omaha City Council District number 7 in 2013. Melton and her husband, Scott, have 3 children, Jacob, Thomas, and Jimmy. She grew up in Omaha attending St. Robert's Grade School and Marion High School. A lot of successful women from around here have come from Marion High School, including our president, Mary Hawkins. Melton received a degree in political science from the University of Nebraska, Omaha, and attended Creighton University School of Law, where she graduated with a Juris Doctor in 2004. Shortly after graduation from law school, Melton accepted a position as a deputy Douglas County attorney in the domestic violence unit. Melton entered private practice in 2008 and became a managing partner of Regan, Melton, and Delaney, LLP, in 2010. She has litigated hundreds of trials and is a member of the National Nebraska Bar Association, Omaha Bar Association, and Sarpy County Bar Association. She has an impressive credential in golfing and a variety of other things, but I'll stop there. In trying to preserve some time for the debate. Again, the debate will take the 2 10-minute discussions, and then we'll have 5-minute rebuttal. I ask that each of the audience members submit written questions, pass them to your left. I will read them after the rebuttals, which they'll have time to respond. We also ask that you withhold applause on any point to the end of our presentation today, just as a courtesy to our speakers. And our core question that we're going to today is, what is the appropriate role of religion in America governance and government? And so, with that, our first speaker has 10 minutes.
All right, well, thank you all for coming on this beautiful day and spending an hour discussing religion and the role of God in politics and government today. So thank you very much. But we are gathered here today in reverence of the document our forefathers painstakingly created centuries ago. The patriots of the Revolutionary War believed so strongly in the ideas of personal and religious freedom that they were willing to give their lives to make sure their children, grandchildren, and future generations were able to live, work, raise a family, own property, and control their own destiny. However, they knew that freedom was only possible with the rule of law. The Constitution was drafted as a limitation of powers on the federal government, and the Declaration of Independence claimed that we were endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These are the rights that no politician, no judge, bureaucrat, or anybody else can revoke. Our country has prospered due to America's commitment to these self-evident truths. The First Amendment of the Constitution states that Congress shall make no laws respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. This free exercise clause recognizes a sphere of religious liberty that Congress cannot invade. During the first 150 years, the Supreme Court rarely dealt with this issue. Since 1940, the court has decided close to 100 cases due to the expansion of government impinging on religious practices. In this country today, we have a fundamental disagreement about the meaning of the First Amendment and the Free Exercise Clause, which is what brings us here today. Both James Madison and Thomas Jefferson intended to provide protection against governmental intrusion on religious liberty. They were more concerned with controlling and limiting government, not the people, not religion, and certainly not speech. The secular left has misinterpreted this concept and relied upon the words of Justice Hugo Black that the Establishment Clause was meant to be a wall of separation to defend and institute controls on our religious liberties. Wall of separation was never mentioned by Madison or Jefferson in our Constitution or in the First Amendment. Instead of keeping religion out of government, government is now dictating and limiting the practice of religion, as seen in the no moment of silence at school, no signs of God at Christmas time in any displays in the public realm. We're unable to utter Merry Christmas even in a public building. There's no Christmas songs allowed at school that may have anything to do with Christ, his name, or God. Our speech is being limited, our liberties are being removed, and our freedom to practice religion is being limited. Justice Rehnquist opined in Wallace v. Jaffrey in 1985, after the Supreme Court invalidated the moment of silence in school, that the founders did not contemplate a wall of separation between church and state because political liberty was more secure when many religions flourished. As long as the government did not establish a national church or give preference to a particular religion, its actions recognizing or accommodating religion were consistent with the First Amendment. There is simply no historical foundation for the proposition that the framers intended to build a wall of separation that Justice Black constitutionalized in Everson. Justice Rehnquist further stated that this concept might have been a useful tool in determining establishment cases. However, due to its practical unworkability, the wall has proven all but useless as a guide to sound constitutional adjudication. The founders intended for God's basic principles to be the building blocks of our society. The intent of the First Amendment was to ensure that we would not allow a particular religion to control the government and dictate our religious practice. Today, the secular progressives are attempting to eliminate any reference to God whatsoever. not just in government or politics, but really in open society today. As I see it, it's more than eliminating God, but I believe they would like to replace God with government. This kind of dependency will allow for government expansion into every aspect of our lives. The secular left's social agenda is a powerful, centralized government with complete control over how we live our lives. They believe that they know what is best, and opposition to this agenda cannot be tolerated by them. The ideologies of Marxism, Nazism, and fascism believe that God was the biggest obstacle to the government's absolute authority and control. Our Constitution was drafted to ensure freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. God represents morality and virtue. The elimination of God will most certainly lead to greed and corruption, which are the true causes and weaknesses and the decline of many cities and nations. Please don't be confused. I am not advocating that we should compel anyone to believe in God, to practice religion, to go to church. Our government can remain neutral without eliminating God from all aspects of public society. Abraham Lincoln said it best during the Gettysburg Address, quote, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. In 1963, the Supreme Court issued an opinion essentially banning prayer in school. Since this time, we have seen a drastic increase in drug addiction, teenage pregnancy, alcohol abuse, violent crimes, rape in schools, assaults on teachers, and just a general disrespect for authority. This decline of moral teaching in our schools has weakened our youth's understanding of right and wrong. The limiting of religious expression has resulted in ruthless religious intolerance. Jonathan Winthrop wrote and spoke about the city on a hill, a government that allowed all persons to have the freedom to practice or not practice a particular religion, not one that eliminates religion or God. Stifling our freedom of speech is the most un-American movement of our lifetime. We are losing what defines us as Americans. Our forefathers had the wisdom to create a system that combined freedom and order with religious faith and tolerance for all. We must recognize that there is a higher moral order. George Washington once stated, "Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports." Even Thomas Jefferson, who is actually well known for being the least religious of our founding fathers, believed that public religious expression does not compel a belief or a practice, and we need to ensure that the rights of all Americans, of all faiths, and those of no faith are preserved for our survival as an exceptional nation. And he once stated, "God who gave us life gave us liberty." I do not believe that Jefferson would support banning a child from reading his favorite story because it came from a Bible in public school, or ban the mention of Jesus in a commencement speech, or suspend a teacher for wearing a cross on her necklace. We have done all of those things. We cannot risk losing the cornerstone of our American liberty to secular oppression. The liberty of every American rests upon the protection of religious liberty. My law partner and I were once having a settlement conference with an attorney and his client, and the opposing party was in the business of home foreclosures by tax deed. And I won't go into the details on that. My client legitimately owed about $20,000. However, under the current law, he was able to take her entire $200,000 house that her and her husband had worked their whole lives to pay off. And she was a widow, and this was really her only asset. And I asked the opposing party, how could he sleep at night doing his job on a daily basis? He looked at me and smiled, stating, "Miss Melton, I determined a long time ago that I had to leave my moral compass at home each day when I leave for work, and now I have no problem." I've never forgotten that profound statement. I have to leave my moral compass at home each day. Whether you believe in God or don't believe in God or have a particular religion, I think that this is the principle and the idea that we leave our moral compass at home is astounding to me. My fear is that we continue to erode our religious liberties and build a more centralized government, and that when doing this, my moral voice will be silenced by the false interpretation of the First Amendment. I fear that I will no longer be able to serve the people, but serve under the dictation of a central godless bureaucracy. A Pew poll estimates that 85 to 90% of our society believes in God. All the major religions believe in God, in a God. Do you really want me to leave my moral compass at home when deciding public policy for our city and her people? Once that first domino is put in motion, the rest will fall. And at the end, I find that without God, without our moral compass, we will be lost in chaos and trapped in a society where our freedoms and our liberties are diminished. If we lose this struggle for religious liberty and the freedom of religious expression in our public square, I do believe that the America of our founding fathers will be lost forever. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. Very well done. We'd like to have Anne come up now and give you a 10-minute discussion on her perspectives on the role of government and religion. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and thanks for the opportunity to be here, although I don't know if I should be thanking you because I think I have the more difficult discussion, which means I want you to know first that this is not meant to be anti-religious, and it's not to mean that I believe all of this. However, in a country where we have laws to protect everybody, including people who are atheists or agnostics, we cannot impose our own beliefs on everyone else. And there's an old adage in politics that says you don't ever discuss religion or politics because it becomes so, so bad. And what are we doing today? We're discussing religion and politics. I have to tell you as I began that I did have an experience before I got here today. I was on my computer, and I was trying to put all my comments in some kind of order. And while I was in the middle of that, my computer froze up. And I quickly thought, like many of us do sometimes, is this someone from higher up saying I shouldn't go there and do this today? But what really happened is I'd left my computer on for about 2 or 3 days and the mouse froze up, and therefore it wasn't anybody from higher up. It was a mouse. But it is a difficult issue to discuss because most people have hard, bent thoughts, and it is hard for these kinds of issues to have an open mind and be logical and think it through and come to a conclusion of your own. And sometimes whatever that conclusion is, like it has been mine, that some of the things I learned when I was very young are things I have questioned and I am not sure anymore today. And some of them I am sure of, that the religion I was raised in, and it's a Catholic, that they were wrong about a lot of things. Their control of morality in this country is devastating. And that's not what has just happened in this country. That has happened throughout the generations. We know in Europe, in France, when there was a rebellion, I think in the 1500s, because the king was a Catholic and he imposed that religion on society, so it was a theocracy. And the Huguenots said no, they were not Catholics. And there was rebellion and things, so it goes back to there, and it even goes back even further if you get into the Bible, and it goes back into the Old Testament. There have never been a real solid feeling that there is one religion, or even that there is one God, or that there even is a God. And so in this country where we say we have freedoms, when we start to impose what our hard thoughts are on things like this, we are saying that everybody has to listen to us. Every child in school, if they have no religion, now is learning something because of these kinds of conflicts. And I understand the concern, because the concern is that morality is all around religion. It is not. We learn our values in a lot of different places. We learn them at home. We learn them at school. We learn them as we go to work. We learn values, and most of those are when you're young, like I was. I learned them at home and at school, at a Catholic school. But Over time, like I said, I've disagreed with some of the things I learned. In 1954, we had the Pledge of Allegiance. That's when we put in God in the Pledge of Allegiance. It wasn't there. And, yeah, so I'm old because I was there in 1954 in about the third grade. But at any rate, I think that we have a conflict, and I wish we could get it resolved, but I don't think we ever will. Because those who believe in a certain faith, even Catholics think that people who have been divorced cannot go to communion. Those are the things that they do within the church, and that is where all of those kinds of rules and regulations should stay. And our government, when we impose ourselves on the rights of everyone, we diminish ourselves in my mind, because none of us are the same, and we just cannot go continue on with all these fights. Actually, they take a lot of time and effort from Congress and the people who are fighting them, and other things that are equally important, like what are we going to do about poverty? We say we're a nation of kindness and goodness, and we are. However, today we are saying that the children who come over from Mexico are not welcome. That's not being a nation of kindness and goodness. And today we are getting involved in another war. And today, and we already know, the problems in Syria today are not about anything except who's going to be the religion that oversees them. It is not about a country. It is about a religion. And so religion has not always been a good thing. When we get into fights like this, we need to set it aside and just decide on ourselves and have an open mind so we can argue, but listen and have it be positive, a positive thing by saying that you are going to think about it. You're not going to say, you're right, you're wrong. And maybe you do that, but the bottom line is you've done it because you had a discussion and you have determined what you think is the right thing to do, which does not mean that you have to be impose that right thing to do on everybody. It means that it's a discussion. This is what I believe, and that's your policy, and this is mine. And I hope we can still be friends. Actually, as you know, I was raised in politics. That's what politics used to be. Today it is not. It used to be my dad was in office for 38 years. It was about negotiations. And his friends were Republicans and Democrats, as mine are. And he'd never vote for a straight party ticket, and neither have I. Because you sit back and you try to address the things of human beings and who they are and what they are, and you do not pass judgment on something that is a strict belief because that simply is theirs. So I'm concerned that we are, I guess, paralyzed in our government today because of people who do not want to talk to one another and try to come to terms that are helpful to both sides, or maybe not, but go back and do your way and then go to the next thing. That's what I do in my office right now. I'm in the Public Service Commission and have been for 18 years almost. And I work with four men who are all Republicans. We have never had an argument, and we have never always agreed. But when we get done, we don't go back and close our doors in our offices and not speak to one another or criticize each other. We just go to the next thing. And while it's a pretty restrictive job that I have and that what we oversee, everything from telecommunications to grain elevators, they are difficult jobs, and so. But that's the way we should act in government and not do these horrible, ugly political ads beating each other up. Let people talk about what they want to do for us and let us decide what we want to do. And that's same thing for religion. Let people what they want to talk about, but I am afraid that I have to disagree, that I do not believe that we should push those things in public schools or in government. We have no right to start dictating what God said. And there are many people who don't know if they believe in God. There are others who don't believe in God. I frankly think that religion at some point is also an act of hope, because all of us who are in this room are hoping that there is an afterlife, I believe. I hope. But the bottom line is, we really don't know. And when the framers of the Constitution wrote the Constitution, most of them were deists. They believed in God, but they didn't believe that God should be part of the government. But they did believe in God, thinking that there was a higher person but who's not going to tell us what we should be doing as a government. So with that, thank you for your time, and I look forward to it. But also in closing, Amy, you are a good attorney. I was happy that I did not have to address the things that you did from the Constitution, because as I read it, some of those things, I thought, really? I don't want to. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ann, for your discussion. And I know sometimes it's difficult, because when you're asked to have a discussion on a topic, you may or may not believe everything that you have to express, but you do have to make a good debate about it. So and both sides have this struggle that they're working with. What we'd like is Amy to come back up for 5 minutes of rebuttal, and followed by Ann, 5 minutes of rebuttal. And then you're getting sheets of paper for questions. Please pass them, and I'll sort them through and try to get some of the more interesting ones in the half hour that we have for that that question and answer. And quite try to make it as informal as possible.
I think first, and we call this a rebuttal, but I do want to say that I agree with Ann Boyle on some of the history of the Catholic Church. But we're not here necessarily to debate the history of the Catholic Church. But as a Catholic growing up Catholic, we actually learned about some of the ways of our former popes, especially back in the 1500s. I think there's an HBO special on Borgia. So not necessarily should we be proud of everything that our church has done. But my point is, I don't want to impose. I love my religion. I love the sacraments that I receive, and I go to church for me. I go to church to try and help me be a better person, to try and help me avoid temptation. That's what helps me. It may not help everybody, nor do I expect it to. What I don't want is, I don't want my government telling me that I can't utter Merry Christmas, or that we can't have the Ten Commandments in the center of the City Hall, or that we have to remove the cross from the Mojave Desert from the World War I memorial that we have there. When you start removing crosses from the middle of the desert because it may offend somebody 400 miles away that would have to actually go there to be offended, that's when we're starting to cross the line. And I guess that's what I'm here to talk about. I absolutely do not believe that our government should impose any Christian or religious ways on the people. We shouldn't do that. But we don't have to go so far as to eliminate God and then tell me I don't have the freedom of speech to speak about God. You don't have to listen. Nobody has to come. In fact, if anybody wants to get up and walk out while I'm speaking and come back in when Ann's speaking, you have the freedom and the right to do that. You actually have the freedom and the right to offend me. That's what living in America is all about. I'm sure there's all kinds of things that you could joke and say about me. You know, I've heard every attorney joke, and then when you start going into blonde attorney jokes, we can really get to them. But that's freedom of speech. We should all care about freedom of speech. And that's my fear, and that's where I see that this country is going. I want to be able to share my values with anyone who wants to listen. But also, historically, our values, the American way, we can't ignore the fact that historically that came from religion and a belief in God. Not one religion. I mean, Catholics were persecuted when they first came over to America. But it was a Judeo-Christian value that I believe even Muslims who don't believe in the extremism, we all have a central core value base. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't pass judgment. In fact, my law partner is former Judge Ron Reagan. He's actually an atheist Democrat. And you know what? I couldn't ask for a better partner, and I wouldn't want to leave him. We have some of the most interesting conversations. We've never argued and gotten mad at each other, but we have great discussions, and I respect him quite a bit. And he was in that room when that opposing party said, I have to leave my moral compass behind. Even Judge Reagan will say, there's room for Merry Christmas, There's room for you to display things with your religion. Let all religions display things. He's not offended because he truly believes in free speech, the freedom to practice religion. And so that's what I think we need to keep in mind when we're having these discussions, is are we actually becoming religiously intolerant in our quest to try and keep a separation of church and state? Thank you.
I disagree that there should not be a somewhat of a separation of church and state. And oftentimes when we are talking about putting a nativity scene on a courthouse lawn, and we know that's gone to court and that they cannot do that anymore. Douglas County, they used to do that, and they had to take it down. But that's government property. That is not all public property. If somebody wants to go across the street and put up a, walk around with a cross, that's public property. They can do that in this country. It's just trying to impose one religion at a certain time of the year. And if, as Amy said, that Judge Reagan says that, you know, we can put all religions on the steps of government property. Are you kidding me? How are we going to do that? Are we going to do something for the Jews and all the other religions, the Buddhists, the Hindus, whatever? I don't think that it even makes sense for us to even invite that. And so as long as the church wants to do it, they can do it fine. There's not going to be any repercussion to doing that. So I think that happens also in the things that we do even in government. Frankly, all of you know that our Constitution, when it began, it was all men are created equal. Men. Maybe that has now been moved to everybody who wants to give a greeting to people in restaurants and places like that or on television, says, hey, you guys, because it's men. Bottom line is, what that means is women were excluded as that, and I frankly think that was just the way of the times, because all people are supposed to be free in this country. And we have seen the struggles for African Americans, that they had their people were killed in the South because if people went down there to allow them to vote. And we have seen that women had to fight for the right to vote, and they went to jail, and they were, some of them were really persecuted. And we have seen the problem today of people about gays and lesbians who are human beings and live in this country, and regardless if you think what their lifestyle is, it is not, in my opinion, it is not something that they learn. It is something that how they were born. And so they need to have the same freedoms that everybody else does, in my opinion. And we can go on and on. But bottom line is we have to change these with the ways of this country, learning that the Constitution was a great document and it's something that we can live by. But there are times when we must come back and say things are not all exactly as they are portrayed in the Constitution. And that is right, what I'm talking about. The minority people in this country have had to continue. And I met a man who was a doctor at Creighton University. He came here years ago from South America. He said, when I came here first, I was welcome. Everybody everywhere was friendly. Now if I go to the grocery store and they can tell I have a Spanish accent, I can feel there is, why are you here? That's terrible. We are all not only human beings throughout this country, we are human beings around the world. And so we need to open our mind to all the different types of civilizations that there are, and some of them are still in the back ages. But we need to open our minds to allowing all people have freedoms, all people. We should not be judging by the color of their skin or their religions or anything else. We should just be judging them by their behavior. And so today, as I agree with Amy, we have a lot of restrictions, but our society has changed radically since I was young. You never heard any children who use the language that I hear from children today. We never saw the things on television that we see on television today. And so, there has been a radical change in what has been happening since the 1950s, 60 years in my life. Actually, only 20 years ago, the internet was hardly used and nobody used cell phones. Look how that's changed. So our life is always evolving, and it's always, we hopefully, getting better. Some bad things have happened, some happen with the way we treat one another, and we're very casual, and we can say anything we want. and especially in the world of government and politics, the internet has given people a right to just to criticize without knowledge, and so and it gives us, I suppose, a right to criticize religion too. But so our world has changed dramatically. We have to keep up with it. But the fundamental thing is this. We are all human beings, and so is everyone else in this country and as long and the world. And even if I'm afraid to say it in Nebraska, but the people who are coming from South America are coming from a land of corruption and evil where people are murdered. A young woman I know who came here over the border told me that her choice in life, and she was a border city, her choice in life when she was about 14 years old was to become a prostitute or be murdered. That's why she ran away. And we are saying, we don't care. The one country that is on our border has more problems than anything else that we have in this country because of drugs and because of prostitution, because of criminal action, and because of corruptness. And we don't do anything there. We go around the world to do things over there. So with that, I have no further things if you're waiting for your questions.
We have a lot of questions. And the to try to respect the time that we have available to us, I'm going to try to synthesize a few of the questions. And I guess the first synthesized question is, we live in a country that has a strong Mosaic law. It has strong canon law as a tradition. In other words, it has a strong Christian, Judeo-Christian legal basis. And it has common law that comes out of the English tradition, as you've referred to. But we live in a multicultural, multi-religious society where we have people that have religions that do not believe that their children should have certain types of medical treatment, or we have people that believe that Sharia law should be the basis of government, and some governments are actually based on Sharia law, which gives different type of norms. And how would the government interact if the government were to be a strong proponent in not infringing on religion? How would it interact if somebody that came from a Sharia law tradition felt that if there was adultery by one of their daughters, they should take them out and kill them? And the American law would say, no, you can't do that. So if children, they want to treat them in a certain way, but the government steps in and says, you can't do that because that, in fact, is child abuse. How would you react to that? So we have domestic abuse, family abuse, medical abuse, variety of subjects that would impinge from different religious traditions that the government has stepped into, and where's the balance on that? So, please.
Okay, well, that was a very lengthy,
it's,
compound question.
I'm trying to synthesize about four or five questions.
And I guess what I would say for anything, I'm not saying that one particular religion should be instituted. And if you have a religion, something like Sharia law, I guess I would just say sometimes there's actually bad religion. If they want to come over and they want to pray and they want to be in our nation, they have to live under our laws. We have the Constitution, and they need to abide by our laws. And I believe that you can practice religion and still abide by our laws. I'm not sure if I understood the question, but if you want to murder your spouse under Sharia law, then I guess you're going to have to do it in a country that allows it.
Yeah, it's getting at the idea of, you know, there's some things we're saying that are your private practice under your religion the government should infringe, and then there's other religions we're saying, but what you practice isn't in concert with our laws and you can't practice them, including your own medical treatment of your children.
Well, I guess we go back to, it comes down to the Declaration of Independence, where it said, life, liberty, we're going to guarantee you life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, each person is guaranteed that right. So that child has that right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Their parent is not able to take it away and then use the name of God or religion in vain to somehow defend it. I don't believe that that's true at all. So, I mean, I suppose they can talk about it, but they can't actually practice it because they would be infringing on another person's life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. In most of the religions that we have in our country today, I don't believe that they're doing that.
So. And one of the questions for you, and this is one that always comes up. You said that the founders were deists. What evidence do you base that expression on?
I read it.
Was it Common
and
Core?
And I looked it up, and they were a variety. But they did not, you know, say that they didn't like religion, as I said earlier. They believed that there was a God, the deists, but they did not believe that God was going to be overseeing the government. And so I think that is what they meant about freedom of religion.
Thank you. We had a couple questions that related to the idea for Amy about when, and I think both of you should probably weigh in on this, talking about when they're in high school or public schools and dealing with the idea of reading a Bible in school, not during class time, not during a time of instruction, but privately reading the Bible and being asked to remove the Bible or themselves from the classroom. And another was, of course, along the line of if a teacher or somebody wears a religious symbol, does that sort of infringe or is that offensive and was asked to remove? And I think one of the more recent ones, we had a football player from Washington Redskins had a T-shirt that was talking about Jesus in a very favorable way and was asked to reverse the T-shirt before he went on the air, and actually it was on air. I guess those are all the same expression, but what are your thoughts associated with the idea of your private religion in a public place and being asked to remove it? What's your thoughts along that line, both Amy and then Anne?
I think that's absolutely an infringement of my freedom of speech. I mean, we're talking about the First Amendment. I think that that's key. This was the First Amendment they wrote in the Constitution, that you should have the freedom of speech, the freedom to express your religion. Now, they said the government should not impose a religion. This is a limiting power on the government. And I think what we've seen over the last 60 years is this has turned from limiting the government, from infringing on your rights, to giving the government control and the government controlling your speech, controlling whether you have a cross on. I mean, does that mean I can't wear a cross to city council? I'm in the government. I'm a representative of the government. I was elected by the people. Should I be allowed? What if my cross offends somebody that wants to get their property rezoned? I mean, do you see the ludicrousy in that? I guess I don't really understand. My freedom of speech, as long as it doesn't affect you, that's what our country, that's exactly why our founding fathers fought for liberty. They came here from England because they had one religion that was dictating and controlling everything that they could think, what religion they should practice, whether they practice or not. They came here so that they could choose the religion or maybe not have a religion. That's why our country was founded. And I think that's the key issue today. It's not about a separation of church and state. Of course there should be. I feel that there isn't, that there's becoming not a separation of church and state. We're having the state control what we can do and control what we say and control what we think. So let's get back to the separation that the founders intended. That's what I'm good with.
Well, I don't have a problem with a child who takes a Bible to school and they sit quietly and they read the Bible, if that makes them feel good and all of that. I don't know that we should do that. However, if the child wants to read that Bible in class, I do think it's then you are talking about something that other children are also going to be hearing. And I think kids, their brains are sponges. They take it up. And when they are in school, of course, they have friends, and then they don't want to make their friend mad, so they might agree with them. I don't think it's healthy to bring religion into classrooms, unless it is in a parochial school or a private school, so that those things can be discussed. And the government doesn't say that teachers cannot teach about the history of religion. They cannot teach a religion. And I think it's a good compromise, I'm concerned because I have friends who have children who are not Catholic, or not religious, and I have friends who are avid Catholics or Protestants or whatever the religion. All of us can get together and talk about other things without getting into those things that we believe so avidly.
Thank you. Anne, this one's for you. Under the discussion that you've made, do you think the Declaration of Independence should or could be studied or read by school children, since it refers to God many times, and then juxtaposition that against the Constitution, which does not reference God, and which document should be more considered in the public domain.
I would hope in today's public schools, or all schools, when they talk about God in the Constitution, that they understand it, as I said, that these were the people who did it in 1791, 2 centuries ago or more. And they were working with what was theirs then. They don't even talk about, I don't think, about, never have discussed all of the religions of the world. And there are many of them, well over 300 of them. Africa has most of them. So at any rate, it's not discussed. It is discussed there. God is mentioned there. But I think it would also be healthy to say that they did not expect God to rule our government. And I find it funny sometimes when I'm watching a football game and it's over and somebody gets down on his knees and says, thank you, God, for winning this game. He wasn't there. If he is, yes, he is not. He wasn't there. But we have now gotten into thanking God for a variety of things. And once, quite a few years ago, I ran by a gas station. It said Christian gas station. And I just thought, well, you can say what you want, but I think it's kind of odd that you would use your religion to try to get somebody to come to your gas station. I thought that Jesus, when the temple, from the Bible, said that he threw out the vendors who were there because they were on the property that they shouldn't have been, but they were trying to use religion to help themselves. You shouldn't do that. And so in this country, we allow it. But I think it's rather comical that we would think that God is going to bring some people to your gas station just because you're a Christian. Maybe somebody who's Jewish or another religion said, no, I'm not going there because I'm not one of you.
Well, I guess my fear would be with that comment that, I mean, maybe we should ban thanking God after you get a touchdown. He should have the right to say, thank you, God. I guess I don't see anything wrong with that. He should have the freedom to do that. I suppose if a gas station owner wants to put on the outside of his gas station that he loves Christ or somehow he's Christian, maybe if that offends a Jewish person, he's going to lose business. If that offends an atheist, he's going to lose business. I don't think we should ban his ability or tell him that he can't say it. I guess... My problem, again, is limiting the speech. We say, well, you can... You know, little Johnny, you can bring your Bible, but really, I don't want anyone else to see it. I don't want anyone else to catch a story or, you know, anything out of there because it might offend somebody. You need to read that in silence. And by the way, next class, we're going to teach you the 3 different ways to put a banana or put a condom on a banana because that's okay. I mean, to me, this just seems like we want to limit speech when it's in reference to God. But everything else we can go ahead and talk about. We can have rap songs that are just fine to play on the radio about raping women. I mean, this is where our society is going. No, nobody wants to limit that speech. But holy cow, we're going to go crazy if little Johnny reads a Bible story to his class because it's his favorite story. I mean, and that's my fear of the direction that our society is going. I don't think ever once today I've said that religion should rule our country or that God rules our country. I believe that we got our inalienable rights from our Creator and from God. But I believe that the power to rule and the government comes from our individuals. Individuals get those rights from our Creator, but then we choose who's going to run our government. I just don't think that the government should choose how we run our lives.
Thank you. One last question. I'll take this one and I'll use my question. And I think it encapsulates a few that are remaining. Recently, the United States Navy, through the Naval Exchange and their facilities, their lodging facilities, made a decision to remove the Gideon-provided Bible from the lodging facilities. There was quite an uproar, and they decided to put them back in. Even a little bit longer back, but really still quite recently, a couple Air Force Academy students were actually... Their boards were actually removed from putting a biblical scripture, as you see at sometimes football games, on their little board outside their room, and they were told they could not talk about Christianity within a U.S. federal institution. Both of you, how do you feel, what are your expressions or beliefs about this type of an approach to try to remove from that formal military institutional environment any form of expression with, and the chaplains have also been warned off, by the way, of discussions and on Christianity. What are your views on that issue with respect to the military, which, again, is multicultural and is in many, many different places of the world? And Anne, we'll start with you.
Well, I think sometimes we go too far. I understand what they're trying to do, but they should just tell everybody whatever you want to do. If they don't want to have anything on their door and they don't want to read it and that other, they don't have to. And that's one of those things that it's another challenge. But when we are trying to control everything, it is not a good society as well. So I wish we could come to terms on that with the government and those who bring those kinds of lawsuits against the government. However, you know, even the American Civil Liberties Union, a lot of people think they're liberals. They are civil libertarians. They have done a lot of good, and even I think they may have gone to court one time because I think there was a group who was, they were Satanists or something like that. And they wanted a tax-exempt status, and I think they got it. But I caution you, that might be something I read and misunderstood, but they would do that. But at the same time, they would stand up for the freedom of religion for all people. And so I suppose if somebody thinks that's a religion, that's what they do.
Well, I mean, my opinion is we're asking our young men and women to go sacrifice their lives for our country, which is based on, and for our freedoms and for our liberty. We're asking them to potentially give their lives. And then we're telling them, by the way, we don't want you to talk about God. We don't want to hear about God. You better hide that. If I'm out there and I'm ready to die tomorrow, I want to believe, and I don't want somebody telling me I can't believe or I better hide it, that I'm going someplace else, that there's a creator, that I am doing this for a reason, that there's something beyond this life. Because I think if we completely remove God and the ability to worship God from our military, I think we're going to be removing hope, and I think that our young men and women are going to, what am I fighting for? Because this isn't the America that my parents grew up in. This isn't the America that grants the freedom of speech and liberty and freedom that I'm being told I'm fighting for. So I think, again, it's things like this where I can't even look at a Bible. If there's a Bible in the room that I happen to go into, I mean, you can't do that. Just don't look at the Bible. Then bury it in the drawer, stick it under the bed. I mean, I guess I don't understand why, because we might offend one person because they might see the word Bible on the cover of a book, that then we have to eliminate the Bibles for everybody. To me, it just makes no sense.
If I could just ask something else, it's just kind of ironic. One is Hilton Hotels have a Bible in all of their hotels for everybody. It's in the drawer. You don't have to look at it, I suppose, but I just think it's odd that they do that. But the other irony, this is really something. Here the government is telling everybody about religion and what you can and cannot do, and they try to, you know, control our lives in some ways or another. Regarding religion, when Congress goes into session, every day they have a chaplain who comes in and says a prayer. Every day in the Nebraska legislature, somebody comes in, a priest or a minister, and he comes in and says a prayer. And I don't know if they do that at the city council, Amy.
We do, because under Marsh, there was a case called Marsh v. Chambers. I'm sure you can all guess who that was involved in, that went to the U.S. Supreme Court. And they ruled that if, as long as it's not for a particular religion, we can still have a prayer at the beginning of every city council meeting. And that was actually a Nebraska case that went to the U.S. Supreme Court. So that is still allowed. I'm not sure how much longer that's going to be allowed with the direction our country's going. But
well, my guess is it's going to continue for a long, long time. It's always been there. So if you're talking about religion and government being involved and religion being involved, it's been there from the beginning with the Constitution. When they talked about God, they didn't explain, really, this is what we think about God, and God is there, but he's not going to run our place, or she. But bottom line is, government is interwoven into all of our lives in some way or another, and I don't think we're going to ever be able to get rid of it. We just have to make sure that a single religion is not going to be a theocracy in this country. Otherwise, our country is going to be turned upside down, just like the French France was when the Huguenots rebelled, and everything else has changed since then. Even in Quebec in 2013, I believe, they said that there would be nobody who could bring any religious things into schools. Or they attempted to do that. I don't know if that was ever passed. But it continues on through the decades and the centuries for religion.
Thank you both. I'd like to give a few thanks. First, Rick, thank you so much for a wonderful event and the planning and the work that you put into it. Thank you. I'd like to thank the legislators, the members of our courts and the executive branch, and actually at all levels of our government, for struggling every day with the ideas of the Constitution and how difficult it is to work these complex issues through as we work every day. I appreciate the citizens of America that go out and vote and bring it to life and enter the debate. I especially, and I have a personal reason for this, but I especially appreciate the military that put their life on the line to make sure that our Constitution survives and we have the ability to debate it. And I'd like to thank these two wonderful women, very accomplished, for spending their time with us and expressing their ideas and their discussion on a very difficult topic. Both Ann and Amy have done a wonderful job. Please join me in thanking them so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a program from Bellevue University on Noon Forum. We've heard a debate on the topic, Does Religion Have a Role in Government? The participants have been arguing yes, religion does have a role in American government, Amy Melton, a member of the Omaha City Council, representing District 7, and arguing no, religion does not have a role in American government, Ann Boyle, a member of the Nebraska Public Service Commission. This program, presented by the Bellevue University Center for American Vision and Values in celebration of Constitution Day, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday afternoon, September 17, 2014, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Rick Galusha, Associate Professor in the College of Arts and Sciences at Bellevue University, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. At the same time this debate was going on, the White House released a statement regarding Constitution Day, saying, quote, "Our Constitution reflects the values we cherish as a people and the ideals we strive for as a society. It secures the privileges we enjoy as citizens." Unquote. In fact, the Constitution, and especially the Bill of Rights, does not secure privileges. It guarantees rights. Privileges can be granted or denied by men. Rights, as stated in the Declaration of Independence, are endowed by the Creator, not to be limited or denied by men. Tomorrow is Election Day in the United States. We encourage you to keep in mind the rights guaranteed by the United States Constitution as you choose which candidates for whom to vote, no matter what the race might be. It is important to vote for those candidates who have expressed commitment to the Constitution and to the Bill of Rights, including, among others, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, the right to peaceably assemble, the right to petition the government for redress of grievances, and the right to bear arms. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 400 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.